Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're shaking. Oh, there you go. Welcome back to
You're good.
You were dancing. Welcome back to another live stream DDG and Politics podcast. I'm Sarah here with Chris.
Hello, everyone.
Giving you guys a break, maybe from the circular conversations and all of the other streams doing the same thing. Please go to ddgeopolitics.com, buy some merch. There's no taxes, no tariffs, and shipping is free. Today, we're going to talk about all of the new military agreements, Russia, Venezuela, Pakistan, Saudi, maybe some UN. And we have a very special guest here with us today. But first, Chris, how are you? How was your trip?
It was excellent. So I just got back from Nizhny Novgorod, which is a beautiful city, about 4-hour train ride from Moscow. And I was at the World Youth Festival Assembly 2025. So last year, I was the vice chair of the U.S. delegation to the World Youth Festival in Sochi, which was attended by over 20,000 young people from around the world. This year was smaller, was more intimate. It was an in-between year between the big festivals. So this one was a small festival. And I got to spend wonderful days with George Galloway and his beautiful wife, Gayatri. And we were able to have a great time. We spoke to many young people. There were amazing people from all over the world. And it was a great time. And of course, it shows that number one, Russia is not isolated. And number two, people are coming and they're learning and they're doing business and things are moving ahead. And it was a beautiful time, safe, clean, and couldn't have asked for a better weekend. Oh, you're muted.
Said sorry. Speaking of the Galloways, our guest is a close friend of the Galloways, a British, Iranian, Arab activist and organizer known for his uncompromising voice on Palestinian liberation and challenges to war crimes and global inaction. He serves as the national election coordinator for the Workers' Party of Britain, drawing on extensive experience managing large-scale IT and construction projects, but most importantly, he is our uncle, Haz. Please, welcome. I'm finally getting to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Much appreciated.
Are you ready to just unload, or shall we prompt the viewers? Or
what are we going to talk about first is the question.
Let's get your, you wanted to talk about Charlie Kirk. So why don't we talk about what you wanted to talk about first?
First of all, thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate it. This is my last night before I go into an operating theatre, which is tomorrow. I'm going to be out of action for 2 weeks. So I wanted to come and talk to you guys because I've been watching what's happening with the child.
We wish you a safe operation and we hope everything goes well.
Really. Thank you so much. Of course. I'll be okay. It's a very long operation, but it's a routine operation that's done on a lot of people. So from the first moment, the first video I saw of Charlie Kirk getting killed, and I said this in a Twitter space, and I think Sarah was there as well, and maybe other people were there, and the recording was taken of it. I turned around and said, this execution, and it is an execution of a human being, it's being done in such a manner as to sear it into the minds and brains of the next generation. We've had the JFK generation, who had their president taken off them, and he was the person who was the president that was giving them the hope of peace. He kept talking about peace and the military-industrial complex did not want peace, and it wanted conflict and war as the way to go forward, because that's the way America tended to have its economy grow and for it to dominate the spaces in between countries and the countries themselves. So JFK was an object lesson that has been taught to everyone from that generation. And it's also an object lesson for every president after him to turn around and make them understand that you toe the line, because JFK was not toeing the line. He was dictating the line to Israel when it came to its wanting to get nuclear weapons. The difference today is this, that we all know we live in a space in a world where there is no CNN, no NBC, no ABC. None of these carry any more weight anymore. The people that carry the weight are the Joe Rogans of this world, are the Dave Smiths, are the Tim Dillons, are the Tucker Carlsons, Candace Owens, and you can add Charlie Kirk to that. Charlie Kirk is also a person who has a huge independent following. And the journey for this young man was one of, I'm an absolute servant and a shill to Israel, which he was. And he played along that game. And a lot of people hate him for that, as did I when I was watching him. But what I didn't see, because we weren't allowed to see it through the algorithm, was his change from the absolute Zionist that wanted to see the murder and cover for the murder of Israel. Turn away from that slowly but surely. I don't know what it was, whether it was his ego, whether it was his Christian values, but all I do know is that there was a rupture between him and his masters. And his masters were the Israeli people that had funded his organization and built it up, and they paid for it. That is what they paid for. As soon as he walked away, or even started to look like he was going to walk away, he started to become a target. And there is no way that they're going to allow that to happen. To allow someone who's got the kind of following he's got, and people maybe don't understand, who live outside the United States, who don't know what's going on. Charlie Kirk is the reason why Donald Trump got the youth vote. That is a huge group of people who normally are not interested in politics in any way, shape, or form. Not here, not in Europe. They can't be bothered. But when you've got, and you've got an ability to galvanize people to come on that journey with you and think of politics as something cool, which is what Charlie Kirk did, he has brought Donald Trump his presidency. Donald Trump has admitted to that. Now imagine if Donald Trump, or the next version of Donald Trump, and you ended up with Charlie Kirk not being in your camp and being against your camp. Everyone knows that Donald Trump right now today is surrounded by ultra-Zionists. His whole cabinet is made up of ultra-Zionists. You can't get past the gatekeepers that are there. That is the situation that Charlie Kirk was looking forward to, maybe in 4 years' time or 8 years' time, destroying that organization, because he had turned away from Israel. And he specifically had an absolute abject hatred for Benjamin Netanyahu, because he looked at Benjamin Netanyahu as someone who's taking Donald Trump down the road, forcing him to do things he doesn't want to do. And the most important thing that he wants to do is to see America first. The America First policy is what won the election for so many Americans. And Donald Trump is now literally making Israel great as his first policy. So the point I'm trying to make to you is this. This guy was a person that could change and move the needle against Israel. Israel could not take the chance of allowing him to continue on his journey, just like Candace Owen did, who walked away and has now become the most singular popular podcaster in the last, you know, her numbers have grown from 3.5-4 million to 5.1 million followers. Her live broadcasts are millions while the show is on. Do you think Charlie Kirk would have had less, power than she does? He has 3,500 campuses with students that are part of an organization that he leads. And the most important thing is, the people who are at his base were sick and tired of hearing and listening that Israel has the right to defend itself while it's committing a genocide in Gaza. And people were sick and tired of it. And that is why, in the end, he had to walk away from Israel. And that walking away from Israel is the reason why he was executed in such a fashion, because they could have just suicided him. They could have. He had a car accident. He could have had anything. They put him in a triangle, in a tent, in a box with 10 cameras on him, and they murdered him to prove a point, that you cannot do whatever you want to do. But what they've done is they've miscalculated how well they're able to lie, how well they're able to control the narrative. And they can't control the narrative, because we live in a world in a day today where every camera in someone's hand is near enough a 4K camera taking 60 frames per second, and there's 50 people filming the guy. You can't escape the reality that's going to come out of those 50 cameras. And all of this stuff they've come up with, of the absolute lies of, that kid did not have a rifle on that roof, okay? He didn't take the shot from that roof. All he did was go there and think that something's going to happen. I don't think he even realized, just like Lee Harvey Oswald, that he is going to become the patsy. I doubt very much he knew any of that was happening. But when he saw the shot, he's like, oh, dear Lord, it's me. I'm the patsy. And he started to run. So I want people to understand across America and across the audience that this was a political execution of someone who dared to step out of line. And that is why he was killed, because he had turned on Israel and he was turning towards his Christian values. And also, maybe not even just them, the fact that he just did not want to be any part of anything that involved putting America second to Israel. And we all know that the whole agenda of the foreign policy of the United States today is Israel first, America second, or even third, because it's for Israel first. And there's also a donor class that needs to be looked after as well, that may not be all American. So that is why he had to die. And that is why he didn't want to be a part of this anymore, because he saw that his president is getting bullied. His president is doing things that he promised he wasn't going to do. And Charlie tried his best. He went and saw the president and said to him, you can't attack Iran. We can't be in another war. We can't be in another regime change war as the United States of America. We have to stop now. And basically Donald Trump shouted at him, told him to get out of my office and whatever else, and just put him in his place. But in the end, he also turned around, didn't go any further than the 12 bunker busters that they put into Iran, and he stopped it there. So just watch the news, but understand one thing. It's all being created for you. They are getting caught to left, right, and center. A guy called Ryan Matter, or Matter Ryan, I'm not sure exactly. I'm sure Sarah will correct me. He is the guy you need to go and watch. And the thing is, it's like a filter and a cone. Everyone's passing information to each other, and a lot of it is coming back to this guy. So he's the guy that's filtering all the information from everyone and turning it into short clips that you can go and understand by watching it. And for me, it's just the simple logic is this. There is no way that a human being can get shot from 200 meters away and for the bullet to come out of his neck down here on the left-hand side of his body. It's impossible. That bullet came out from that angle, which means the shot was taken from behind him to the right-hand side. So to forget everything else, just don't believe the lies. Believe your own eyes, as I keep saying to people, specifically about what Israel does. I say, don't believe their lies. Believe your own eyes. Your eyes tell you he fell to the left. A bullet came out of there because we saw the wound there, and the bullet wound was going in that way as well. So that's how I feel about Charlie Kirk, and I feel sorry for his family, because I think people should have the opportunity to change their lives and become better people. And he was on that journey, but he wasn't allowed to finish that journey. And what makes me absolutely sick, beyond sick, is watching the people that killed him, the people who are responsible for his murder, sitting there putting pictures up of Charlie Kirk with the Israeli flag and the American flag as if, you know, Charlie was our guy. Man, he walked away from you. He didn't want nothing else to do with you. He had closed that chapter of his life with you guys. And you're sitting there trying to get the emotional power of his death, the slaying of a JFK or a or a situation like this and trying to harness it for yourselves as the Israeli side, it's repulsive, sickening. And then watching his show, his Charlie Kirk show, if that show gets taken over by an Israeli, that is the end of justice in this world. If they end up with a shill taking over his Charlie Kirk show, that's a travesty to justice and humanity, because quite frankly, he had turned and he'd been saying on his own show how the things that were being done were being done in bad faith. So you can't allow that to happen. And I hope that the owners or the people that are running this TP, whatever it's called, understand that there are people like myself who would like his memory saved for who he was and what he was, rather than use it as propaganda to help the people that killed him. Because those are the murderers. The deep state of the United States of America, with the help of Israel, between these two.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/football. Fuel points TC.
Security services, they murdered that kid who could have been a future president of the United States of America. They took him and put a bullet through his throat when his voice could have been a voice that was, as you can see, changed from rabid Zionist to one of holding power to account. I'm going to land my plane, as they say, Sarah. Because that's what we say in spaces, or I like to say, I land my camel. So there you go. I wanted to get that off my chest. I'm so sorry if I went on too long.
What? No, it was your chest to get it off of. What is the general kind of conversation surrounding it in the United Kingdom? They kind of used his death last week and to kind of grandstand on in that crazy rally they had with Tommy Robinson, didn't they?
Yeah, and the whole of this Tommy Robinson guy is literally. Works for the IDF. He works for Mossad. He is nothing but a person that gets bankrolled by the Israeli ministry. They've got this special ministry of foreign affairs that all it does is fund projects and it gives money to people like him who are there to cause problem in the country. You got to look at it this way. Before the 13th of September, Britain had made a decision, the prime minister, that if Israel doesn't bring the ceasefire into place, they're going to start to, make Palestine recognize it as a state. As soon as that conversation started happening, this rally was organized. Why? Because they want to disrupt and remind the prime minister and the British government that, listen, you may be the prime minister of this country, but we know how to switch valves on and off. We know how to turn a little incident into a proper hate crime, and then we can get people, because it's literally just have something happen, an accident happen, or something happen bad, and you switch it around, which is what they did with the three kids that were killed up in Port, whatever it was. These guys are able to manipulate algorithms to bring people out to do what they got to do, and they are manipulating it. And Tommy Robinson, you know, I'm a person who's in politics, so I know I can recognize things and maybe I see things a bit better than other people. The normal people are angry beyond angry, and they have a right to be angry. But you don't have to follow someone like him. Follow someone that's not tainted with the money of a foreign country that is no friend of ours and is, in fact, trying to control our country, trying to control our politics, and has been paying to have people control our politics. Follow an Englishman, if you want to follow him, that's saying the right things about all the other things that I agree with. But don't follow someone who's an agent of a foreign country. And that's Tommy Robinson is nothing but an agent. Nothing else.
Well, I also, since you're so involved in the pro-Palestine community and that that activism, I did want to get your thoughts on, because it's a big event today, overshadowed here in the United States, maybe by the funeral, but their recognition of Palestine. So I have a few clips. This is first Macron.
I consider that if we want precisely to build the sustainable peace for Israel itself and for Israeli people, a political process and the recognition of a Palestinian state, if this state recognizes the right of Israel to live and defend itself, is demilitarized, has security forces with a vetting process by Israel, with obviously a proper governance and reformed governance.
I haven't really even gotten to talk to you about this. Macron's basically saying, you know, there needs to be two states in order to even have peace to begin with. What are your thoughts about this whole sort of this new charge to recognize Palestine as a state and it being led by Macron?
So let me put it this way for you. It's really simple. There is never going to be a Palestinian state. While there is one person in the United Nations that has got the power of veto, they will stop everything to protect and defend Israel from ever changing and doing anything responsible, or what I call to be like a human rights sort of responsible country. All 91 countries can agree that Palestine needs to exist. The United States, which is, unfortunately, a partner in genocide of the Palestinians, will never, ever allow Palestine to exist, because the intention is this. Gaza is being erased from there is nothing higher than 3 feet standing in Gaza. They are literally systematically destroying it from the north, coming all the way down south. They're going to leave nothing there. They're going to kick everyone out, or they're going to kill everyone. Francesca Albanese has said 680,000 of the 2.3 million Gazans is gone, dead. You know as well as I do, Sarah, so does Chris, that we're watching the West Bank get annihilated and deleted as you're going along. There is no intention to have two-state solution. There's only going to be a one-state solution, and that one state is an Israeli state. Palestinians will get kicked out into Jordan, will get kicked out to wherever. They're not going to be allowed to stay there. They're going to take over the whole of the land. And we all know they've got this map called the Greater Israel Project. And that Greater Israel Project goes all the way to the borders of Iraq, goes all the borders to Turkey. And people, you know, think like this is all just lies and whatever else. They're just doing whatever they want to do, and no one is stopping them. No one and nothing is stopping them. There has to be a concerted effort to stop them. And the only thing that the Israelis understand is military power. And the only thing they'll understand is if the United States is in a position to say, you know what, you need to stop because we're not paying for this anymore. So it's one of those two things. And the one where we end up in a war situation, they've got nuclear weapons. And I will tell you 100% that they will use those nuclear weapons. And that is a guaranteed fact of life, because they've put it in that if we feel as a nation that our this, that, and the other is going to come to an end, it is an existential end, we're going to use nuclear weapons. That's their Samson doctrine.
Yes,
Bibi's response was, a Palestinian state will not be established west of the Jordan. The response to the latest attempt to impose on us a terror state in the heart of our land will be given after my return from the United States. Wait for it. We doubled Jewish settlement in the West Bank, and we will continue on this path.
That is the reality. I mean, why do you think they've cleared up 40,000 people from Jenin? Why do you think they've flattened the whole of that refugee area? They're getting it ready for people to come in and take over. And they still have people wanting to come over. Maybe if the situation with Iran flares up sometime soon, that may stop people wanting to go there, because that will mean Iran this time is not going to sit back and do whatever and let them do whatever they want. And then we're going to see a proper configuration, because the last one was not a proper thing, because Iran didn't even use its proper missile systems. It used the ones that it had from before, and it didn't really hit them that many times because it didn't need to, because Tel Aviv, you saw and I saw, was getting crunched, and they had no missile defense system that was working against anything that was throwing at them. And Iran has promised them, if you do attack us, which we all know they will, this time they're going to level them. And that's what should happen, because Israel only understands one thing and one thing only, violence. There is no conversations to be had with people who have zero restraint when it comes to, you killed one of ours, we have to kill 20 of yours. So let's say they lost 600 people, 700 people. That was the responsibility of, let's say, Hamas. Out of the 1,100 people, they killed the other 500 themselves. They also brought their troops, told them to stand down from 5:20 in the morning till 9:30 in the morning so the massacre can take place. They've turned around and said, we have to punish them. So my question is this. You've lost one person. The other side has now lost 1,000 people. Is that enough blood money for you guys yet? Because you've killed 680,000 people. That's a ratio of 1 to 1,000.
Well, I think we hit everything. Did we cover everything you wanted to cover, Uncle Haas?
Pretty much, yeah.
Chris, do you have anything?
The only question I have for our beloved uncle here is, how do you think the Workers' Party of Britain can help to shape the political landscape in the UK going forward? And what are your short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals for the Workers' Party of Britain?
So the Workers' Party of Britain, we've decided that we're going to join your party and in any way that we can to help support it, because we have faith in Jeremy Corbyn as the leader of the left. He is the only natural leader. He was the leader of the opposition. He's got more of a mandate than Keir Starmer does. He had 12 million people that voted for him. Keir Starmer got in with 9 million people. So just to be absolutely clear, we didn't win the elections with Jeremy Corbyn last time because there was a combination of Conservatives with Irish MPs, DUP members of Parliament, that got the majority. So that is the reason why Jeremy didn't. I mean, he wasn't going to win anywhere, but we could have made a deal with the SNP. We could have done a deal as the Labour with other parties as well. We could have done it with the Liberal Democrats and we'd have been in a majority. But the Conservatives had 12 DUP that voted with them and they got the government. I personally think that the only thing that matters is changing the landscape of the politics of the country before it runs away from itself. Why? Because the Labour Party has proven itself not to be a left party anymore. It's not even a centre-leaning party. It's now becoming a right-wing party. It's become the Conservative Party of 20 years ago or 10 years ago. The Conservatives are on the right-hand side of where they were 20 years ago. The Reform Party are even further right. So my biggest fear, and why I have not called Zara Sultana names, not called Jeremy names, and I keep trying to say to people, we as the Workers' Party would like to see the end of fascism in our society. And fascism at the moment, its face is the face of the Labour Party, and tomorrow it will become the Reform Party. These are fascists. They don't care about the poorest people in society. We're supposed to have a representative democracy where the people we vote for, who are our MPs, are supposed to reflect the will of the people. They get into power, and every single one of these people that gets in there, once they're in government, it's no longer their will. It's the will of the British establishment that has come before it, whether it's a Conservative Party or a Labour Party. It's whatever the will of that government or the British establishment that will tell, well, sorry, sir, but we've got to go and do it this way. Sorry, sir, we've got to do it this way. And that is where the fault or the breakdown of democracy is. I know that if we have Jeremy win and become the leader of the left in this country, the way he's organizing it, which is this is going to be a community-led sort of from the bottom to the top policies and ways of creating communication with civil society, that's the best way for politics to go. It's also a place where socialism has a chance to grow, because we nearly got socialism in 2016 and 17. We were that far away from getting that. And we would not be the country that we are today, 10 years later, sitting on the same side as a genocidal state and being. We are literally on our knees to whatever Israel wants to do. Mm. Jeremy Corbyn was not allowed to become a member of the prime minister because they asked him a simple question. Would you allow Israel to do what it's got to do? And he turned around and said, no, I don't. I'm not going to give a pass to Israel to do whatever it wants to do. And that's when the machinery turned on him. So we as the Workers' Party, we want nothing but the left to win. We as the Workers' Party of Britain want to see the left rise, whether it's through the Workers' Party or your party or any party. We just can't afford for Britain to be going down this pathway of becoming a reform party, because they'll become the new center. And then we're going to get this new mushrooming of further alienation and right-wing politics. That if you look at in America and the rest of Europe, politics is moving further and further to the right.
Yeah.
And that is where that's where the problem is. I don't want to live in a civil society where I've got to be a racist, you know, to be part of the majority. I want to be a part of the majority that believes in looking after my neighbor, looking after the people that live next to me. And, you know, I want to care about the people around me rather than I am just on my own, Jack Jones, which is what they're selling us.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. Everybody, please follow Haz. I have a banner. There we go. Follow Haz on X. Good luck to you and your surgery. Please check in with us as soon as you are out and able to. Thank you so much, Haz, and try to enjoy what's left of your night before you.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much.
Take care, guys. Good night.
Yes, you too. Take care.
Okay, now we have the Pakistan Saudi deal. So, let's see. I'm trying to get my bearing.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
Very, very rarely do I go from interview to into episode. Okay. So September 17th, so a couple days ago, Saudi Arabia and Pakistan signed the landmark mutual defense agreement during Prime Minister Sharif's state visit to Riyadh. The deal signed at the palace commits both nations to mutual military support in the event of external aggression. So it includes a collective defense clause. I think they're like super excited about this all over. Okay, so it includes a mutual defense clause, collective defense clause, nuclear deterrent. Pakistan's defense minister confirmed that Saudi Arabia is now covered by Pakistan's nuclear capabilities, expanded military cooperations in the fields of intelligence sharing, defense tech transfer, weapons deals, and joint exercises. An open membership clause. This is what I wanted to talk about it. It has an open membership clause. Pakistan says other Arab countries may join, potentially expanding the alliance into a Gulf-wide defense bloc. What do you think about this? Plus, this gives the Saudis a nice little link, albeit not direct, to China, to China's logistics and China's military. What's going on? And Pakistan's a major Belt and Road partner. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I think we have to see it in the context. Just over the past few years, and I have been talking about this when it started. I remember talking about it with quite a few people and on a couple blogs, a couple podcasts, things like that. We were talking about what was happening with China, Saudi Arabia, Iran, right? So Saudi Arabia began to, instead of being the traditional sort of U.S. puppet state in the region and bin Laden, you know, saying that Saudis are just one big state for American bases and American control, Saudi Arabia under MBS started to, over the past few years, try to shift its foreign policy. So we've seen a lot of transformation in terms of how the Saudis see themselves in the world. And I remember talking about this with John Kiriakou, and he was saying that it's quite a remarkable shift that the Chinese were able to mediate between the Saudis and the Iranians to bring about some level of diplomatic normalization at a period when both of the countries were on opposite sides in regional conflicts, including in Syria, right? And so I think that this is an extension of that, of Saudi Arabia trying to understand itself in the multipolar world. Like, where does Saudi Arabia fit into this equation? And I think we have to look at it in the broader context of what's happened since October 7th. Because if I'm a Saudi official and I look at the map of Greater Israel, boy, they're coming for some of our territory, that's for sure. Right. And if the Israelis can just bomb now seven countries without any recourse, I mean, we're talking about Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, Yemen, you name it. There's a few more actually in the general, of course, Palestinian territories themselves. Also, jets flying over Iraq, jets flying over different territories, maybe even Turkish, Azerbaijani airspace. We don't quite know how some of these things went down. I think that there's a lot to be said about their long-term security. So now that Doha was bombed, you know, and Qatar, of course, they've just been mediating the conflict. That's all that they've been doing. They've been trying to mediate between Hamas and the Israelis and the Americans, and they all of a sudden, you know, their capital is being flown over and bombed by the Israeli Air Force. So, of course, they're like, forget this. So that's the beauty of this. It's not only limited to the Saudis. It's even broader, because even the Qataris have said recently, maybe we can rely on the U.S. for our security. And they're also looking into different types. And we have to look at this, because I'm sure the Saudis saw, between the short few-day war between Pakistan and India. And that Pakistan, with its relationship with China and China Tech, was able to down five Indian Air Force planes. And so they're like, okay, maybe there's something to this. Pakistan is the only Muslim majority country that is a nuclear power, right? So that nuclear umbrella, I think, under the banner of the Islamic world is something very important, I think, for them to now have some part of. And I think that's what they're thinking at this point.
Yeah, same. I think it is about the nuke. I have to play this because it's just so good. They're so excited about this. I love Gulf Arabs because they come with the drama. Like, they come with the theatrics. They're like, we're signing this and we're going to sing a whole entire nasheed about it. Like, it's so great. But I'm glad that they're excited and it does expand their nuclear umbrella. But our viewer did ask the question that I was going to ask you as well. What happens if Yemen strikes Saudi oil fields?
I think it all depends on Yemen will not strike the Saudis if the Saudis are not aggressive towards Yemen and also do not normalize relations with the Zionists. And I think normalization at this point is a far away equation, because I think a year ago or a year and a half ago, there was a lot of talk about normalization. I think now, especially with the annexation of the West Bank imminent, and Rubio just took a picture underneath the Al-Aqsa compound, underneath the third holiest mosque in Islam, And they're tunneling. And the goal, of course, is not only archaeological surveys. Please give me a break. There are preparations being made for the third temple. There really are. We have to accept it at this point. It's not a conspiracy theory. So there are preparations being made for the third temple, and that will be a transformational moment in terms of Israel's relationship with the Arab world, the Islamic world, I think with many countries, if not most around the world. So I think that the Saudis are thinking about this, and I think that this is also part of the equation between Yemen and the Saudis, and the Saudis thinking about their own security as well. And I think that they also have to understand, not everyone in Saudi Arabia supports the monarchy. The Saudis also understand that they are also in a sensitive position. If they normalize relationships with the Zionists, if they somehow betray the Palestinian people, they're going to also have domestic issues as well. And that's been a longstanding issue for the Saudi monarchy.
Saudi monarchy is also giving money to the internationally recognized government of Yemen. So
So the internationally recognized, so the money and the relations, when I was in Yemen, we talked about this. They're not friendly, let's say. They're not hostile. It's somewhat trying to mediate because there is trade between the two. People go back and forth between the two. The main issue is not to expand the war. It's not for Saudi Arabia to reignite the war and the humanitarian crisis that was, you know, years ago now. And so that's the real question at this point, is what role does Saudi Arabia play in Gulf security and especially vis-a-vis Yemen? And the Saudis also know that Yemen is not alone. There will be others that will get involved as well. Maybe not openly, but covertly they will. And Saudi Arabia also has a Shia population. There's so many things in this equation. I don't think the Saudis want to deal with it at this point. I really don't.
They would be stupid too.
They really would.
Another agreement. We had a Russia-Venezuela agreement. September 18th, Venezuela's National Assembly passed the first reading of the Strategic Cooperation Treaty with Russia. Key points are scientific and commercial exchange, humanitarian strategic investments, energy deals, possible BRICS for Venezuela, and joint fighting versus terrorism and trafficking, which is interesting as Maduro is being kind of assaulted by Trump and makes a deal with Putin to fight terrorism and trafficking. They have old longstanding deals, but this apparently elevates the relation to the highest level. Deputy Roy Daza said this treaty signed by Putin and Maduro is a message of peace, sovereignty, and strength of the Venezuelan people. But the same day, I don't know if we were even allowed to play these videos anymore because of the Pentagon restrictions, but we bombed another boat, another lethal naval strike, allegedly transporting narcotics. Trump obviously posted it on his Truth Social because why wouldn't he? And then I believe he announced this. That's from today. Donald Trump announced that the U.S. military conducted a lethal kinetic strike on a boat in international waters. Oh, Maduro sent a letter to Trump. That's what happened. Okay, so Maduro sends a letter to Trump and tells him that he's ready to negotiate, to direct talks through envoy Richard Grenell. So why do you think Maduro is reaching out to Trump now after signing a deal with Putin?
Listen, I mean, this is, if we can talk about it, I mean, this is the Putin doctrine, really. I mean, you have to engage even with countries that consider you an adversary to be able to at least, you know, use diplomacy, right? They're not that these states are not belligerent rogue states, right? Russia, Venezuela, Iran are some of the most astute diplomatic states in the world today. They are very strong international partners in multiple alliances and international organizations. So what they're basically saying, and Maduro has done this many times, is we are willing to mediate this, but you have to understand our position. The problem is that the United States doesn't care about anybody's position. even if they know that their position is wrong, their position is right, right? So Maduro is trying to basically prevent what will be a catastrophic military engagement if the United States does pursue military action against the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. I think that that's a big thing. When I was in Venezuela, of course, they said that we want to deepen our relationship with Russia. That has been ongoing. In 2019, when I went, Russia landed two Tu-160s, right? The White Swans, nuclear capable, the best of the bomber fleet from Soviet times. They're still produced in the Russian Federation. There's actually new orders coming off the line. They are the equivalent of the B-1 that we have. So when you look at that, you have to understand that the United States felt that that was a tremendous escalation. But Venezuela simply said, yeah, but you fly these kinds of bombers to Turkey and to other NATO countries next to the Russian Federation. So we have also a right. This strategic partnership provides a layer of insulation. However, Venezuela knows that Russia is in a difficult position now. And what that strategic partnership looks like and how much aid can be given across the Atlantic at a time when the Russian Federation is at war with NATO, as Peskov recently said, this is a big deal. And I think that we have to understand it in that way. I think Maduro wants to have this go peacefully. But if that's not the case, the Venezuelan people are ready.
Yes, he did respond by launching Sovereign Caribbean 200, which was a small exercise of 2,500 troops doing amphibious landings and those sorts of things. And then Trump did come out and say this today about Venezuela.
First business to be in right now. The captain of a cartel drug boat in the Caribbean.
They're in trouble.
Or a late night network TV talk show host.
Oh, they're both in trouble, although Greg Gutfeld's doing great. You know, so I think I'd take that one by a long shot. We have the water drugs, I call them the water drugs, pretty much stopped. In fact, I think water fishing, I think almost anything we have to get into a boat right now in that area would not be doing too well. We have to stop the drugs from coming into our country and killing our people. So we've lose, in my opinion, 300,000 plus a year to fentanyl and drugs coming into the country. So when you feel badly for somebody that gets blown away, you have to remember they're killing thousands of people. Each one of those people is responsible for killing at least hundreds of people.
So don't go fishing, don't go out in a boat, might get blown up. This is after he confirms that he received the letter from Maduro, which said, of course, Maduro says, President, I hope that together we can defeat the falsehoods that have sullied our relationship, which must be historic and peaceful. These and other issues will always be open for a direct and frank conversation. He, in the letter, he also reaffirmed that only 5% of Colombia's drugs transit Venezuela. 70% are intercepted. So I guess Venezuela's under siege, blockaded.
It's basically a blockade. This is basically no different than what happened in the Cuban Missile Crisis with the ship surrounding, you know, the U.S. Navy surrounding Cuba. The question is today, I think, if the Russian military can cross the line, because, of course, that was the big question during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Can the Russian ships cross basically what was a blockade of Cuba and run the blockade? And of course, at the end, Khrushchev backed down and didn't run the blockade and turned the ships back to the Soviet Union. Now, of course, the equation is a little bit different. So we'll see. Of course, Russian planes are still flying to Venezuela. So maybe on the sea, there's been a change. But by air, things are still moving. Now, when I was at the airport, we saw Russian military planes also there, the big Ilyushins and things. So I think that in this situation, you're going to have brinksmanship. And I think Trump is, you know, sort of saber rattling here. I think if Trump really wants to defeat the drugs, maybe he should go after, you know, some of those hoity-toity parties in Washington, D.C. and maybe some of these conventions that he, you know, schmoozes at, where there's a lot of drugs, I'm sure. I mean, just go to the bathroom stalls and do some swab tests. I'm sure we can find plenty. So
I implore people, look up where the top five Latin American drug exporting countries are, and then look up where we have the most lily pads or military installations. They're the same exact countries. So it tells you the whole story. You don't really, Venezuela doesn't even break the top five ever.
Just wondering, you know. I think that if you want to defeat drugs, ultimately, either you go the legalization route, which other countries have done, or you clamp down also on not only on the production of drugs, but on the consumption of drugs. That's one way that you could do it. I don't know. I think the U.S. is using the cover of drugs here to do the classic age-old trick. I don't like Venezuela. They're a socialist country. They're part of the troika of tyranny. Now they're a narco state. Now I'm going to overthrow them to defeat the drug trade. Then we get in there, and what we're going to do is we're going to build a bunch of casinos. Venezuelan women are going to be prostitutes, and we're going to have a ton of drugs for American tourists to use.
Right after Trump got inaugurated, I said, they're going to combine the war on terror with the war on drugs. And now we have it. We're going to finally have it.
Correct.
Two useless wars. But wait, there's more. We may be reigniting the war on terror. We'll get to that in a little bit. Speaking of state sponsors of terror, Iran is getting sanctioned again.
Could you tell us if we're going to see the snapback of sanctions against Iran at the end of this month? Is that a done deal?
Yes, I think so, because the latest news we had from the Iranian are not serious. I think the Minister of Foreign Affairs tried to make a reasonable offer, but probably was not followed by the other members of the structure. But you're right to say that France has always been a very...
So they're sanctioned again, even after agreeing to let the IAEA back in. The UN Security Council rejects sanctions relief. Russia, China, Pakistan, Algeria vote for Iran. South Korea, Guyana abstain. Nine countries, including the U.S. and the Euros, vote against it, which triggered the snapback mechanism. This is technically the reimposition of all pre-2015 UN sanctions on Iran. Russia and China have already issued issued pre-vote warnings, calling the move illegal and vowing to ignore and defy the snapback enforcement. In response, Iran has cut off IAEA cooperation. And Pezeshkian said, we will never surrender to excessive demands. Iran's parliament has 14 legislative proposals in motion, including withdrawal from the NPT and the full expulsion of the IAEA inspectors, as well as the acceleration of domestic uranium enrichment and domestic posture.
Things are getting hot, you can say. By the way, I want to finish Macron's sentence. Macron said, we cut it off, but he was saying France has always been an imperial and colonial power, except into French Revolution history. But I'm glad that he was able to be honest for once. Maybe we should be honest also about Brigitte Macron, but okay, we'll save that for another time.
Don't get sued now. Come on.
I know. Listen, I think that Iran has to make a choice. Iran, of course, you had two Iranians on the program tonight. Iranians like to be diplomatic. We're always, you know, in the region trying to negotiate between all these great powers, and we're also a great power. I think that Iran has to make a choice. If it's going to be truly axis of resistance, multipolar world, BRICS, then it basically has to say, we're going to take the hit and we're going to cut these relations now. And we're going to have to figure out a way to no longer rely on the West, on any of these negotiations, and fully commit. And actually, this is the big debate between the reformist camp and the hardliner camp. You know, people like to use this term, hardliners. But of course, there was a hardliner president, President Raisi, who was tragically martyred in the helicopter crash, which is also suspicious, but okay. And also, you know, Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian. So when you look at that and you look at today, Pezeshkian and what's going on, I think there's a big debate by even within Iranian society, those who want to be more close to the West and those who want to be more close to Russia, China, and the rest of those countries. there hasn't been a security agreement to the level of what we just talked about, for example, with Venezuela, or even what exists between the DPRK and Russia, or Russia and China, or even now Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, between Iran and these countries. There exists security or sort of cooperative agreements, but they're not at the level of, you know, full on, we're going to come to your aid and defense. And I think that in order for that to happen, they not only have to commit, but there has to be a transformation in Iran's foreign policy. We haven't seen that necessarily yet. There's still an ongoing debate. I don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of debate in Iranian media sphere, in social media, amongst Iranian political thinkers about the direction of Iran. But what our beloved uncle said is true. Israel will attack again. It's just a matter of time. It's just a question of when. If that's the case, and everybody knows the writing on the wall, then the Iranian government must make a decision. If these snapback sanctions come now, it clearly shows that the West is uninterested in what's to come. And if that's the case, Iran, I believe, if I was in the ear of our beloved Imam, Ayatollah Khamenei, I would say, go to Moscow, go to Beijing, buy up as much as you can, and forge an alliance with them. If that means we got to send Iranians to Kursk or wherever we got to send them. That's it. Send them. You know, Slava Rossiya. But we got to do something at this point. We got to do something because we're going to be further and further isolated. And this indecision about where we stand and which side we take is eventually going to could lead to the breakup of the country.
I agree. And I think that they're going to be knocking on their doorstep in more ways than one. Trump this week has been talking about Bagram a lot.
We're going to keep Bagram, the big air base, that one of the biggest air bases in the world. We gave it to him for nothing. We're trying to get it back, by the way. Okay, that could be a little breaking news. We're trying to get it back because they need things from us. We want that base back. But one of the reasons we want the base is, as you know, it's an hour away from where China makes its nuclear weapons. So a lot of things are happening, but
as soon as that comes out, this starts. Malala.
Oh, she's back. She's back. The Trotskyist is back. Who would have thought?
What? And so then yesterday, this comes out. If Afghanistan doesn't give Bagram Air Base back to those that built it, the United States of America, bad things are going to happen. But the Soviets built Bagram. So exactly. A lot of confusion going on.
Make Russia great again. Give it back to the Russians. I'm ready. And of course, Russia is the only country to recognize the Taliban government. Therefore, maybe the Taliban will give it back to them. Or be right. Like, let's make cooperation.
Let's see what the Taliban had to say. They're always a riot.
با شما تعامل بکنه یا شما را به رسمیت بشناسه و شما در عوضش باگرام میت یا نه اگر به رسمیت هم بشناسه و تمام افغانستان هم از سر نو جور میکنه باگرام چی بلکی یک گز زمین هم داده نمیشه یه موقف امارت است یه موقف مردم است مردم است اگه ایتون میشد بس چرا 22 سال پیش چرا این چیز را قبول نمی کردیم که ایک شهدا دادیم ای که در بدری آمدی که رهبرا شهید دادیم این همی کارا که شد خود در مقابل ازی شد وقتی که ما در دوها مذاکرات داشتیم باور بکنید بسیار به صراحت با امریکایا و با دیگه خارجا می گفتیم همه از طرف تیم مذاکراتی که ما یک پردم با در یونیفرم نظامی شما را قبول نداریم
این که در برابر خاکمان یک وجب خاکمان یک بلیس خاکمان با کسی تعامل شود این چیزی است که هیچ امکان نداره و امکان پذیر نیست ما ضرورت به این نداریم او کسایی که خارجی ها را آوردند اینجا بالای خودشون حاکم ساختند و میخواستند که با زوری از وا ایجا حکومت بکنند اونا ترسو و بزدیل بودند اونا از ترسشان به کفار پناه برده بودند ما با اتکا به الله بزرگ از هیچ کسی از هیچ زورگو و قلدری نمیترسیم و این ثابت هم ساختیم در 20 سال جهاد علیه اشغال علیه امریکا و متحدینش این ما ثابت ساختیم که هیچگاه نمیترسیم.
Was the foreign minister and chief of staff responding? So we're going back. Let's recap what's been going on this week. We've got a Pentagon propaganda campaign recruiting warriors in the name of Charlie Kirk going on this week. They're prepping that, and we're gonna go back into Afghanistan.
The peace president. Isn't this what you wanted? Is this what Americans voted for? They voted for peace. Peace means war. We're literally in 1984. It's driving me crazy here. It's driving me crazy. Literally, everybody was, we all thought Donald Trump, okay, America first, peace is on the horizon, and the 800 to 1,000 foreign military bases, bring the troops home, invest here, we're ready to go, build the bridges, build this, build that. No, we're right back where we started. Manifest Destiny, Department of War. We're reading, you know, we're saying the Lord's Prayer while looking at troops in the Middle East again. And I'm like, we're bombing in the Caribbean. We're bombing Iran. Now we're going to take Bagram. I'm like, wait a second. Is this back to the future?
It's literally like our country's life flashing before our eyes. We're doing everything we've ever done. We're back in the Philippines. We're in Nepal. We're in Korea. We're going back to the Middle East. We're doing Monroe Doctrine stuff. It's like the whole entire history of the United States is exploding.
Really? I'm really quite confused about this whole thing. And I'm thinking to myself, what's going on with the show over there? What's happening in the White House? Like, well, how does anybody think this is a good idea? Not to mention, it was President Trump, if I'm not mistaken, in the period of 2017 to 2020, that dropped the MOAB on Afghanistan. President Trump ordered the mother of all bombs to be dropped on Afghanistan. And those men you just saw in sandals and beards, when, you know, sporting, you know, much bigger beards than I have currently, they defeated the U.S. Army. They defeated them. It's just a reality. The Americans have to accept it. They'll say, oh no, we could have stayed another 20 years. Sure, you could have stayed another 20 years and you would have had no money left at home. And then you would have had a civil war at home and then bye-bye USA. But they got their asses handed to them and they were thrown out. And they left in the middle of the night. You remember that famous photo of the last, you know, I think it was the 82nd Airborne commander, you know, jumping on the last airplane, C-17 or whatever it was, leaving Bagram. That was it. America's out. Trump was already negotiating with them to leave. I don't think Bagram was in the equation at that point. So the idea, and of course, the subtlety here is that it's an hour away from China's sites, which right. Of course to me is saying, wait a second, we just bombed Iran's nuclear sites.
Right. Exactly.
This thing about bombing China's sites, that's when you really have to wonder, are these people sane? Or are they all apocalyptic nutcases now and waiting for the Messiah to come? I don't know. I'm flabbergasted by the whole thing.
It's literally like no conflict really ever ended. They were all kind of just frozen for a little bit. And now the United States is like, thaw them all at once.
Yep. Like,
I'm waiting for like a big troop movement to like, I don't know, like Okinawa or something insane. Like this is just, but we can't talk about it because we're not allowed to talk about things anymore. Here's Trump on the media. This is our last segment.
Tell this free speech question, because you said that you restored free speech in America.
Yeah.
Is that free speech, including for people who are harshly critical of you, for your political opponents, for people who say things you don't
like?
I've
become immune to it. There's never been a person that's had more unfair publicity than me. And that's why your network paid me $15 million or $16 million, I believe, to be exact, George Slopidopoulos. And that's why CBS paid me a lot of money, too. And that's why I sued the New York Times 2 days ago for a lot of money. I'm winning. I mean, I'm winning the cases. And the reason I'm winning is because you're guilty, John. You're guilty. ABC is a terrible network, a very unfair network, and you should be ashamed of yourself. NBC is equally bad. I don't know who's worse. I think they're equally bad. And, you know, for you to stand there and act so innocent and ask me a question like that. But look, You paid a big price because you were dishonest, Jen. The reason I won that lawsuit was because you were dishonest. You were proven to be dishonest. And so you can't sit back and just say, oh, well, what do you think? You know, like you're some wonderful person. You're not a wonderful person. Frankly, you're a terrible reporter. You know it, and so do I. Okay.
You're a terrible reporter. You know it, and I know it.
They went off this week. Dan Bongino says the FBI it has and will continue to aggressively pursue individuals and groups who further their political and social ideologies through coordinated violent extremists. He then goes on to say it's cracking down on the left. Trump comes out screaming about Antifa. They're being designated as a major terrorist organization. And then the Pentagon says that you got to get approval for everything or we'll take your press passes away.
As a proud anti-fascist, and as somebody already on a Department of Homeland Security intelligence report list that was leaked by The Nation in 2020, where I'm number two, listed after TrueAnon's Brace Belden, who's number one, I guess there we are. I'm ready to take it on. Here we go.
The only thing I'm afraid of is that when they go looking for Antifa and they don't find any, that they're just going to make their own, right? That they're just going to say, you're Antifa.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm an anti-fascist, just like, I don't know, Zhukov and all of the great Soviet Red Army and all the partisans and all of the Americans and the Abraham Lincoln. Like, we're all part of the anti-fascist tradition. We went after Hitler. We went after Mussolini. We went after imperial and fascist Japan. That's what we fought for. We fought for a better world. We fought for a world that was against these chauvinisms and things like that. But, of course, now we're the terrorist organization. Interesting. Interesting how we've become the terrorist organization. But if, like, you know, we were having this conversation two episodes ago and then last episode as well. When we were talking about the years of lead, like we said, they went after the left, and then they also emboldened the left in other ways. We're seeing a lot of this mixed messaging now. It gives me the creeps about what I'm seeing. You know, it makes me wonder, like you said, now they're going to make an Antifa, an organization. They're going to find some bank accounts and link it to Soros or whoever else they want to. And then they're going to say this organization, you know, is going to be responsible for some act. They're going to blow something up. They're going to shoot somebody. They're going to do something. And then you see how this is going to go, right? That's what I fear.
I think they mean Antifa, like the militant wing of the Democratic Party. I honestly think that's what they mean.
Well, for sure, that's what they mean. They're looking back. You remember, they're trying to portray, if you remember the Unite the Right rally and this kind of stuff, that happened in Charlottesville, Heather Heyer, who was killed there, and how Antifa was understood at that time. And that was 2017, right? Antifa was understood at that time.
2017, yeah.
Right. So that was like at the start of the first Trump administration.
Yeah.
Antifa was understood as basically, it was portrayed as a wing of the Democratic Party. Like the crazy left lunatics, right? Like he loves to say. So the crazy left lunatics are the Democrats. And Antifa is exactly like you're right, like the militia of the Democrats. So this is also going to turn into a political fight as well. And this is going to be used for continuing the polarization that's already been ongoing for quite some time.
Are they talking about, one of the interesting narratives is that's come out, and I'm not going to name any names, but that it's a Russian narrative on Twitter. A Russian push narrative that is now. Let me be upfront with our viewers, and I've said it on my personal Twitter. I don't think Israel worked alone to kill Charlie Kirk. I don't think that they killed Charlie Kirk. So let me put that out there. But the new thing is that Russia is pushing a narrative on Twitter, telling people to say that Israel is responsible. Why would Russia be interested in it? Placing the blame for Charlie Kirk's assassination onto Israel.
Makes no sense. Not to mention Charlie Kirk, I believe, was also targeted by the Ukrainian regime for his hostility towards continued funding and arming of Ukraine, and was advocating for a peaceful resolution and a quick settlement, and was actually more conciliatory towards the Russian position and understanding of the Russian position for this entire special military operation even before, from 2014. So I think that the Russians have nothing to gain. But isn't it interesting that any time there's a high-profile assassination, and we can go back to JFK's assassination,
they still blame that on
it. Goes to Russia, or at that time, the Soviet Union. Because Lee Harvey Oswald was petitioning for, you know, Cuba and had gone to the Soviet Union and quote-unquote defected, and then magically came back to the U.S. without any issues at the airport, got all of his documents back, got reintegrated into society, was able to live a nice, clean life after defecting to the Soviet Union a decade, less than a decade after McCarthyism at the height of the Cold War, and came back without any issues. And all of a sudden, it's Russia. It's the Soviets. No, please give me a break, please. You can't always use the boogeyman for that. Now people are aware of that because people said, okay, we lost JFK, RFK, Sleepy Newton, MLK. How many other people have we lost? How many other people have been shot? It can't be Russia. Russia can't be everywhere. Russia, you look under the bed, Russia. You look in the closet, Russia. You look in the fridge, Russia. Who stole the milk and the cookies, Russia? I mean, at some point, it's got to end. So I think that this is a cheap way to try to deflect from people's growing concern. It doesn't have to be the Israeli state alone. That's the thing. Like, people try to think like somehow Netanyahu signed off on it. No, it could just be some rogue general talking to some rogue intelligence guy in the U.S. sitting at a bar smoking cigars and saying, look, what can we do? You know, what's possible? It doesn't have to be a major statewide operation. A lot of operations happen with just very few people in the know. But their impact is enormous because of what they're able to achieve with such a small cell of people. So I don't think they operated alone. They had to have operated with somebody, or somebody had to have operated by knowing something. But at the state level, I don't think anybody knew.
I was listening to Haas's space the other night. It was really great, and people were coming up, and that was one of the debate points. And I mean, always that when something happens and you think it isn't happening the way that you're being told, you have to ask yourself who benefits, and nobody could answer how Russia would benefit from from the killing of Charlie Kirk.
Not only that, Charlie Kirk has been lionized here. A lot of people are
That's what I was going to ask you next.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about him here in Russia. A lot of people, I mean, just at the World Youth Festival, everybody was lauding him, praising him, the open and robust debate, the ability. I mean, we had, for example, on stage, Tara Reid, Garrett Pearson-Sharp. We had George Galloway. We had many, including myself. And we were talking, and a lot of people were saying how tragic it was, how awful it was, how that's not to be tolerated. And that's inside Russia, right? We're inside Russia. Outside the U.S. embassy, there was a small little memorial. We saw pictures at various places that have anything to do with the U.S., people putting pictures, not only of Charlie Kirk, but also of Irina, who was also the Ukrainian woman, right, who was murdered on the public transportation. So when you look at that, the Russians are totally sympathetic. And I think that they're very sympathetic to somebody who was sympathetic to them. So I have no idea, you know, quo bono, like who benefits from this? How can they possibly benefit from this? There's just no rational explanation for that. Unless the explanation is the always, you know, sort of recourse. Oh, they just love chaos.
Yeah, they want to sow division. It's like we're already divided. Chaos. They didn't need to kill Charlie Kirk. We're divided. We're divided plenty. They didn't need to kill anybody.
Yeah, they didn't have to kill anybody. Trust me, there's plenty of division already. Yeah. That's going on its own. Has its own logic, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think we got through everything, and I hope you guys had a good reprieve from the hot topics that I think will be a hot topic for at least another week or so.
I don't even know.
It's such a lost cause here, Chris. Like, you're just, I'm almost jealous of you.
Listen, it's very interesting. Haas made a very good point. The hagiography now that's being constructed around Charlie Kirk is interesting because each faction, each group is using his memory for their own purposes. It's very fascinating how this is working, you know?
They have made him into a multifaceted character, and they've done the same thing with his killer. So anybody can be mad at the killer. You just project onto him whatever you need to project. Was he a tranny? His boyfriend was. They were also furries. Oh, they were also leftists. Oh, they were also this. Oh, they were also that. They're also Mormons. You could project almost anything into these.
His uncle was doing stuff in Ukraine. What was the story now that we have of So you see how this thing is taking shape and a life of its own. But really, the sickening part is people using his memory to further their own agendas in the ongoing genocide.
They made him into Uncle Sam. Okay, right. So I mentioned earlier the campaign, the Pentagon campaign, using him to recruit people. Charlie never served. They're giving him full military honors. Anyway, Charlie never served. But so they're doing a whole campaign to recruit in his name. And then they posted pictures. A bunch of people posted this picture of an American citizen enlisting in the IDF and then said, well, I'm doing it for Charlie.
That is
insane. You guys see where this is going?
That is insane. I mean, first and foremost, the America First crowd, and then to enlist in another country's army using the memory of somebody who was very much a patriot for their own country. It's just, I mean, it's like mind melt. I don't know how it squares. It doesn't. It can't.
Going back to Bagram for Charlie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm in Taiwan for Charlie. I'm in Donbass for Charlie. Like, what?
You should go look at the, I shouldn't laugh because it's a funeral and seriously, like, rest in peace, but. Like they have pictures of him, like Uncle Sam saying, Charlie wants you to vote.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I mean, the assassination was horrific. There should be a funeral, but people are now saying this is like a state level funeral. Like we're talking about the highest of the high.
Yeah.
And he deserves, of course, the most beautiful and fitting funeral, but this funeral is also an instrument of the state to be utilized as a cudgel against its enemies and as a recruiting tool to firm up its ranks and to expand its ranks. That is how ideology works. And I think that when our viewers and listeners and when other people begin to understand that, they understand the tremendous power that an event like this can have. And simultaneously, how things like this happen to further these kinds of agendas, because they do historically. I'm saying this is what happened one way or another. I don't have the information in front of me. There's a lot of suspicious things. Everybody can agree.
Sure.
Before we go, can we talk about you and I were in the military? 30-06. Stopping that bullet when it confronts human bone. I just want to, just that. Like if they had said any other round, 9mm, I would have said, okay, I understand. 9mm, I can understand. 22, of course, I can understand. 5.56 even, okay. 36 or 7.62, that becomes a much more difficult for me to understand at that kind of range. What are your thoughts on this? I want to get your opinion on this, really, because I'm wrestling with it a lot right now.
I had blown past the entire assassination and was like, you know what? I don't care. You guys can argue that out. And whoever killed him at this point to me doesn't matter because we already see how it's being utilized and by whom. It doesn't even matter who killed him. Then they came out with the magic skeleton theory. And I was like, I can't join you. I can't do this with you people. You know, they were like the surgeon said his bones were so healthy and so dense that it absorbed all of that force, all of that energy, and it went down, like it went down to his heart, then exploded again. And what we saw was shrapnel coming out of his neck. I'm like, I'm a girl, like, and I'm not a gun girl either. And even I'm like, it did what?
I really believe we're in magic bullet theory 2.0. Like, that is very similar to what they said about JFK, about the gunshot wound, that it somehow magically went in one way, twisted and turned around, and came out an exit wound that couldn't possibly have been physically possible.
This is what they're saying to people. People that are saying, I don't believe the story about the skeleton. They're saying, well, then I guess you don't believe in God. Because the guy who came out and told the story was like, it was a miracle. It's a miracle that God did that to the bullet so it wouldn't hurt anyone else. I said, well, if God was there, why didn't he save Charlie? I mean, if he was there anyway.
We could say that, but as a former seminarian, let me say this. If that's true, why did God, when the bullet missed Trump, the multiple bullets missed Trump, why did it kill spectators in that crowd? God somehow selective? Maybe now people are like, Charlie is like the Messiah and Trump is...
Chris, you're not here. Oh my God, they're already talking about it. Somebody said, I prayed to Jesus that Charlie would be the next Lazarus.
I'm sorry. First of all, Lazarus was done while Christ was incarnated during in the New Testament. So there can't be a new Lazarus because we're already past resurrection, ascension, and everything. We're waiting for the second coming and the last judgment. These Christians don't even know their own theology. It's driving me crazy. I'm ready to throw myself out this window here. Like, how can you not know that? The next Lazarus. No. Now everybody be the Lazarus for Christianity when the judgment comes. But until that point, nobody's coming back. You see what I'm saying? This is where the stuff gets hairy. I'm sorry.
You think? And you're like,
I know.
Think about how horrible people must be doing if this is what they're engaging in, though. Like, that just tells you that life and reality is shit.
But how could Fox News run with an article like this?
New York.
Like who's
they're
who's
all making- in on it? They're all in on the storyline together. And if you don't fall in line, then you are like ostracized. There's a campaign right now: unfollow Candace, block Candace for Charlie. Now, I'm not a Candace Owens fan by all means, but now we're blocking people for Charlie. Like, this
wasn't this the side of the aisle that was like, oh, a bunch of snowflakes, cancel culture, we're against that, freedom of speech. Freedom of speech. Okay. Freedom of speech to say anything you want. Somebody can call me whatever they want. Okay. You have the right. As long as you don't threaten my life physically, like there's an imminent threat. We're okay. Whatever. You can say whatever. But somehow now we're going to block people we don't agree with. That side that was against the blocking to begin with, that had lawsuits against people who blocked, right? So if you were to put it on the list, Candace is up there. Tucker is up there. Max Blumenthal, Jackson, who else? Who else is up there? And who else is like leading the charge against this narrative? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, those three, Max, Candace, and Tucker, I guess, and Jackson have been painted as the ones kind of carrying this Russian narrative. That's why the easiest way to debunk that is to be like, Russia doesn't benefit from this.
No, I can't. I just don't have any. I have no clue how they benefit from this at all. But in your mind, who else is also on that? Well, what do you think about the Nick Fuentes stuff? Like, where does he fit into this equation?
I'm not nearly as like married to the idea. You know, Jackson will come out and just be like, Israel did it. He doesn't care. I'm not on solid ground with it. Israel did it and acted alone. Like, they came in and I'm not with it. I'm trying to think if there's any other big accounts, but
where do you think like the show? So if we think about like who benefits, there's already a $1 million investment. I read there's already people moving into that show sphere. Like TPUSA, I feel like, is about to do a major pivot towards Israel.
Yes. So that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting as well. There's the rumor that Charlie Kirk turned down the $150 million, but then I'm not thinking Erica Kirk will. Erica Kirk's family is very dedicated to Israel as well. I don't really know her that well, and I don't want to like throw shade on a person who was just widowed. But there, I have heard that she's more conservative than him. And when they, you say more conservative, usually that means more Zionist as well. She's taken over, and I don't know who's taken over the show. There's the rumors that, you know, Ben might take it over. There's the rumors that they'll do guest hosts, but, I think, and they're saying now everybody lies about everything. So who knows, but they're saying there were 80,000 new chapters of TPUSA registered. They're trying to get into high schools now.
80,000? Do we even have that many universities? And I mean, like what?
Right.
That's insane.
Right. So.
Wow. That's.
I mean, there's pictures of Charlie Kirk hanging in the Knesset right now.
I mean, that's for sure. I'm surprised that, you know, there's not more. There's not a mural or something, you know.
There's billboards.
There's billboards for sure, you know.
Billboards. There's a lot of interesting stuff coming out about both of their families and what kind of work Erica was involved in. A lot of really interesting stuff that I'm sure people that are better than me will dig into.
I think that you and I can agree, and DD Geopolitics can say that there's more to the story than meets the eye. And that's why we continue to ask our listeners, viewers, subscribers, everybody who follows our channel to continue to keep an open mind, to continue to ask questions about who benefits, and to just do some digging. Because now in this era, when you can't believe most anyone, every citizen can become a journalist and an investigative reporter. And take it from me, who found Epstein's second black book, that there are things on the internet that just are out there.
You still have that, don't you?
I do.
Why aren't we engagement farming off of Epstein's other black book?
Do you see how this stuff happens and then nobody's interested in Epstein anymore? They're like, release the files. And now everyone's like, oh, what files?
Right. We got to come together for Charlie. We got to come together for Charlie. Now's not the time for division. We got to come together for Charlie.
Who's Epstein?
There's a genocide going on. We've got to come together for Charlie.
Correct.
For Charlie. Guys, make sure you do everything this week for Charlie with Charlie in mind. We will see you guys on Wednesday, hopefully with a special guest. If not, come find me in the spaces trying to not walk into the ocean and drown myself. Chris, what are you up to this week?
This week, I'm about to go. I think I'm going to go and take George Galloway and Gayatri to the DPRK exhibit here in a few days. And we're going to hang out and just, you know, continuing to fight for a better world for all. That's what we do.
We will do that. We'll see you guys around. Have a good week. See you soon.
Take care, everyone.